This is the Amp Hour Podcast, recorded May 26th, 2015, episode 251, Petitentious PNP Progress.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
What's up, nerd?
Hey, nerd. Welcome back to another Dave and Chris show. Just us.
It is.
Just ba-ba-ba. The usual crap.
Can we have one of those like cartoon intro tunes?
Like the Benny Hill theme or what?
Like cartoons. No, I'm talking, you know, the Bugs Bunny show. You know?
Oh, they always had like orchestral music, didn't they?
Yeah,
that was nice. Yeah, I know that, maybe we've talked around the show before, but I know that they actually had an entire orchestra to, like, because it used to be such big money, they used to have a whole orchestra that would actually play intro themes and that whole, like, Bugs Bunny is like the opera and all that.
Yeah.
Maybe we've discussed it here. I don't know.
But I don't know. Anyway.
Usual recycling.
Apologies in advance for any weirdness in my voice because I'm trying to speak on one side of my mouth.
Yeah, talking on the side of his mouth.
Yeah, I've got a mouth issue at the moment. And if I'm not careful, I can
hurt himself.
I'm going to hurt myself. So,
His livelihood's at risk, folks. He's risking it all to be here. Yeah.
I need to insure my mouth, don't I?
That would be interesting.
So, all of a sudden you find all my videos are just text overlays or computer generated voice ones.
Or those videos where they don't talk at all in videos. Talk in your videos, God. Folks. Come on. Let's do this right.
I think I said that on Twitter like a couple of months back or something, or probably quite some time ago. Yeah, like one of the things that really annoys me is people who switch on their camera, do a YouTube video, like they're going over some product, and they don't say a word.
I know.
They don't say a word.
I know. And usually, this came up a lot during the Hackaday Prize last year, too, because a lot of people did that.
That's right.
I don't speak English, or
it doesn't matter.
The one guy did the computer tech,
the
voice
computer
overlay.
That's right. Oof. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'd rather have like a super thick accent that I have trouble and strain to hear than not talking or hearing computer stuff anytime. Like, especially because you get like a lot of software intros where people are just like clicking different areas and it's just it doesn't do it. You know, like why even have a screencast at that point? I don't know.
Oh, it's
I guess
dumb.
That's insider baseball, huh?
Like I don't care if you speak a different language. That's fine. Just talk.
Yeah.
At least have
or
something
talk
to
your
to.
Native language, and we'll turn on Google Translate, and you know,
yeah, right.
It's starting
laugh.
To get better too. Yeah. Well, but it's better than nothing.
Right. Yeah. Oh goodness. So yes, people speak. But not with a lisp like I am at the moment. Lisp.
What's new other than the lisp? Any news in the world of EEV blog?
Possibly. I put this on the forum the other night, and I need feedback from Amp Hour viewers too. So link will be down below for this.
Or listeners, one or the other. Yeah. Viewers or listeners, viewers. One of the two. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There you go. You can tell where my priorities lie.
That's right.
The show that makes money, as opposed
right,
to the show
yes,
that
of
doesn't.
Course, of course. This gives
Although,
you social
you.
Capital, Dave.
No, thank you for the those who are donating via our Patreon account.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes, we do. If you want to support the Amp Hour financially, you can do so via Patreon. Links down below.
Or somewhere.
Anyway, there's
feedback.
Anyway, yes, Google have a, what is it, a program thingamabob, is it a contest? No, it's not really a contest, it's a grant for popular channels. You have to be a popular channel, you've got to have more than 50,000 subscribers, So it's only for popular channels, sorry, folks. But for them to up their game, so to speak, and produce a web series, and they'll give you up to $100,000 to do it. Mm. So they're going to, you know, pick five channels, and they're going to give them up to $100,000 to produce a web series on, well, not quite anything. There are rules you must follow. But yeah, so I'm, you know, I thought, oh, maybe I could come up with some sort of engineering web series because, you know, like these things, like last year it was like, you know, Pimp My Car, right? You know, one of those car channels they went on a, you know, it's good. I like it. They went on a series where they rode their cars around Australia and all that sort of stuff. Somebody else did some zombie series, you know, with actors and everything else. And, well, I'm sure they never had an application for engineering or something to do with engineering or science or something like that. So I thought that'd be interesting.
It would be to you and probably your audience, but...
yeah, I know. Well,
this is
see, that...
time for a cynical Chris to come out. I think that the majority of people that are going to, you know, like web denizens are mostly like, I love video games and things that blow up.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Mythbusters wasn't, you know, like it was mostly explosions towards, you know, the middle, right?
That's all you can do.
You have to kind of appeal to this really broad base, so...
That is why they have rules, and one of the rules is that you must do something that appeals to a broader audience than your current channel, right? So you have to sort of, you know, and then, yeah, that's the idea, is to try and get people to expand to a more broader audience. And so that's what I'm after. I'm after ideas for a web series that
Dave's going to be doing dancing with the soldering stars.
And dancing with the nerds, yeah.
Dancing with the scars, that's what it'll be called. Soldering and dancing with the scars.
Oh, goodness. Is that your best idea?
Well, I don't think it's going to work, to be honest. Not to take on the role of the negative Nelly in, you know, our usual
dynamic. Right. Well, that's why I'm after ideas, right? Why can't, like, my first idea was that I could do something on, say, renewable energy, for example.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
That's a little broader.
That's got broad appeal.
Yeah.
Right? That's got broad appeal. And anyway, so yeah, I need people's opinions. I haven't had too many at the moment, so I need more, and one will suddenly maybe jump out and go, oh yeah, that's brilliant. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Whether or not I've got the chops to pull it off is another thing. But, you know, with that sort of money, like, you do it properly, right? You know, I don't just do my off-the-cuff thing. You know, you'd spend months planning it, and then you'd, you know, hire a filmmaker, you know, you'd hire a, you know, a filmmaker and editor and everything.
Something
like
that,
you'd actually, put some money into the production side of things.
Yeah.
And, And I can't think of... Really, all the ideas that I came up with involved travel. It's like nothing I came up with involved like something I can just do here. You know, it's like I don't know why that is. Maybe I'm not smart enough to come up with an idea because travel is not easy for a family guy like
me. So. No, definitely not. Yeah, right. What do you mean by travel though? Like you need to travel to see other things and like
I'd need to travel to see other things go on location. You know, if I was doing renewable energy, for example, I'd have to go to where all the renewable energy projects are and go, here it is, you know, like
wind turbine behind you kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I'd have to do one of those, you know, David Attenborough, type things. If you ever watched his stuff, he like, or more importantly, the making of the David Attenborough things, like he travels all over the world to, you know, like 50 different locations for like 1 30-minute thing. And they shoot like 1 minute, like they go to a different country, set up all the production, spend
weeks, like
and
three
then
hours
they shoot,
worth. Yeah. And yeah, then they and, edit and it to 1 minute.
Yeah, and they edit it down to 1 minute of footage, you know, that's kind of...
That's nuts, yeah.
So, yeah. So these, another thing is they say, you know, 5 to 7 minute, you know, episodes for this web series and maybe five things. It can be longer, but it depends on your subject material. So.
Yeah. I may be on TV soon, I found out.
Oh, really? Why?
Yeah, it was really dumb. So I was at there's a hardware startup meetup in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I forgot, I didn't mention this to you before the show, but yeah, I was at this, you know, it was this meetup that I knew about because I'm a moderator on the hardware startups subreddit. And So I always see about these things and stuff like that, but I've never been in San Francisco when it was happening. And finally, this past time, I was there. And yeah. So they had people line up. Do you know like how these meetups? Have you ever been to like these meetups before?
Nope.
So like a lot of the meetups, they're you know, like, so I actually run a meetup as well in San Francisco when I'm out there, where it's mostly like I get former guests of the Amp Hour to give talks at our
right,
office.
Yeah, yeah.
But this one was more like lightning talk. So it's like everybody gets like 2 minutes to kind of like pitch. And right. You know, like you like those silly pitch competitions.
Yep.
And so I was talking about parts IO and other people were talking about their startups, stuff like that. But at the beginning, they all had to sign releases about to being on this startup U or I think, and I'm like, oh well, what channel is this on? They're like, oh, ABC Family.
What?
Oh, okay, cool.
Right.
So I may be on ABC Family in 6 months. You know, it's like that where it's like,
right.
If I didn't look stupid and if they decided to use the footage of me, it's just like, ugh. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I don't have a face for TV, Dave. I think...
Neither do I.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I said as much in my Ignite talk that time.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I've got a head for radio and a voice for cartoons.
There you go.
That's what I said.
Yep. Yeah. So yeah, but the thing that might, if I do make it in there, if I do get on that TV thing, I will have my new t-shirt design in there. I was wearing the t-shirt at the time of recording.
Are you going to tell everyone what it was?
I finally will. So I for the second year in a row, I took a new design to Maker Faire. Last year was never trust the auto router. This year. Well, Dave, why don't you explain what you thought of it when you first saw it?
Explain what it looks like.
So it's a guy riding an animal, and the animal looks like a soldering iron.
It's kind of like a horse, right? It's kind of like a horse with like the tail. The tail is like the cable of the soldering iron, and the head is like the soldering iron tip. And you're riding this soldering iron, basically.
Right. And he also has a whip that's actually made. It's meant to look like a whip, but it's actually a spool of solder that's being dragged behind him, so it kind of looks like a whip.
Right.
Yeah. And the whole idea that it came from was that he's a solder jockey. Which is what a diminutive
and
name that one gives
exactly
oneself.
Exactly. Right. That's the first term that came to my mind. I went, oh, solder jockey.
Yeah,
I get
there
it.
You go.
But
yeah, right.
Why?
But,
because, right. Yeah, that's the thing. Solder jockey here in Australia means
like a grunt.
Like a grunt. The dumbest tech possible. You know, the dumbest, noobest tech, you know, sort of like incompetent type tech is a solder jockey.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So it just didn't make sense for, you know, why you would have something, why you would advertise yourself as something like that.
Because it's like, you know, like when people call themselves like grease monkeys, you know what I mean? It's like that's our version of grease monkey. It's a diminutive term, but it's also how you'd refer to yourself, you know, like, oh, I'm a grease monkey.
Right,
you know?
It's a self-deprecating
It's self-deprecating,
kind of
right, thing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I was a solder jockey today. You know, I was just soldering boards all day, I was a solder jockey.
Right,
so
that's right.
That's the idea. And most of the people that came up to me, like, they like stared at my shirt and they're like, oh, I get it. And every time I'm like, so what do you think it is? And they're like... Well, it's a soldering iron. And I'm like, yeah.
Right.
No.
So they didn't get the jockey part.
No, they didn't. Most people didn't.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was obvious to me. The first, like, within half a second
on,
of glancing at it.
You're Dave Jones.
Jockey.
Come on, man.
All right. What does that mean? I'm a soldier jockey?
No, it means that, you know, you've been around long enough that you would get that. Right. Anyways, it's all about the you know, the insider knowledge. So I'm actually wearing it again right now. I like it. I think it's a great design. But obviously, I made it, so it will be on Teespring shortly. So if people are interested, they can get one. But yeah,
you
it was
a
Maker
Faire. You can be a solder jockey.
Yeah, you could be a solder jockey whenever you want to. Maybe you could only wear your T-shirt when you're doing soldering all day. So yeah, I was at Maker Faire I guess that's 2 weeks ago now, because last week we had a guest.
We did, so we didn't really talk about it, did we?
Right. So yeah, Maker Faire, you know, pretty standard.
Is it getting boring? Different? How many 3D printers did you see?
Not too many.
Right, because last year I thought wasn't it flooded with 3D printers? That was just like all
I mean,
there was.
Always kind of are. I mean, this year, I mean, I'm very interested in, you know, resins is still interesting, I think, and like even the FDM stuff. I mean, it's all getting better. Right. There was AIO is there. I've actually seen them. They're out of LA, so I saw them.
Who's AIO?
I mean, I think that's the name of the printer or the other thing, but basically it's actually really gimmicky and kind of fun because they have a rotating scanner internal to their machine, and then it can also print on the same surface. And so they have like a scan, copy, print, and then fax.
Oh, so you can put an object in and then it copies
right.
it.
Right, but the whole thing I like about it is that they have the term fax because it's like you scan it and then you send it to someone else's printer and then they just print it immediately. And it's so dumb, but it's like, like the gimmick is like, is really fun. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
because
totally.
People that still know what a fax machine is.
Right.
It's these days. But so I had seen that before. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's the usual, you know, companies growing up. Tactia, who I saw last year, who I was very, very impressed with, and who actually Nadia, who we've had on the show before, it was actually her friend who I forget his name, but he was one of the founders of it. But it's like a handheld router with like BeagleBone running, or it was a BeagleBone, I'm not sure if it still is. It was like a vision script basically, where they had stickers on a sheet of 4x8 plywood, and then you can basically move this router around, and you can like do designs basically. It'll tell you where to put the router and it'll just go and cut. And so they renamed a Shaper and they're still very awesome. So I'm very excited about that. I think that'll actually significantly impact hobby woodworking, because it's like so much of like so much of the difficult stuff in woodworking is kind of getting to the center of those huge sheets of plywood.
Yeah,
at least in my opinion, and basically you can kind of program in like different types of joints now, and just like all this crazy stuff that you really couldn't do before, and so it's kind of opening that up. So I thought that was very interesting.
Got it.
And that you know, there's other stuff. I don't know what else. I'm always a sucker for CNC stuff. I did talk to the Aussies. Cartesian Co.
Cartesian Co. Yes.
I hope to have them on the show at some point. They're another. So I actually met all of the circuit printing folks. So Cartesian, I met at that meetup I went to. I met who's the ones who won the TechCrunch thing? Volterra.
Ah, right. Yeah. Yes, Volterra. Yes.
Yeah, and they were the ones who had that cool overlay thing. So like basically they had the circuit printer, and then. And then they have the dielectric material, like the insulating material, so you can jump over.
Yep. Yes.
Which I think
is
very cool.
The Volterra, I believe, was on like Popular Science. Whether or not it was like on the front cover or something. Anyway, there was some big article I saw the other day on Popular Science about the Volterra. This machine will change everything. Blah, blah, blah. This machine will change do-it-yourself electronics or whatever. And meh. So what's your opinion after seeing them? My opinion is still meh.
So,
you know.
I'm still pretty skeptical, but not necessarily. I mean, the thing that was interesting is I talked to Ariel from Cartesian, who I hope to have on the show at some point, and he mentioned that he has a switching circuit. Now, like I've said in the past, I think that ultimately you have to have – I think a switching circuit is the – like a, you know, a buck regulator is a perfect version of a test circuit for that, because it can be high current, it could be high frequency, you know, you need thicker traces. Basically, it kind of puts your circuit to the test. And then you could start to test, you know, emissions and stuff like that around it. And so he said that he didn't have any with him, but he said that they've done that a couple times. So
I have no reason to believe they wouldn't work just fine. Mm-hmm. But I believe that's missing the whole point of why these machines are meh.
Yeah, I agree with that as well, because, and this wasn't me that thought of this, it was someone else, where they're like, well, yeah, but it's only one layer, you know? It's like, oh, well, shit, yeah, of course. Like, it's a one-layer
exactly.
board, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
See, that's the thing. Like, these things, they can't drill holes. Yep. They can't do through, well, no, the Volterra one can do through-hole plate-in because of its dielectric layers, but...
No, it does crossover, so that's really what that
sorry,
does.
Oh, sorry, it does crossover, it removes the dielectric layer at that point, so it joins the two... together, but when you can buy a proper FR4 double-sided board for almost, they're practically good for like for $5. Like, the only reason you'd want one of these machines is if you need something now for a quick and dirty prototype.
Well, and I think that but I think that maybe the point that we're missing here, Dave, is that more people do than we think. And maybe not, but I think that, you know, if we see it succeed, that does at least point towards that.
Ah, but we've got to be careful when we say succeed. Right? Yeah. By succeed, we don't mean, okay, they sold a couple of thousand units, right? It's like how much the industry grows. Are people actually using them as a part of just buying them, thinking they're cool, and then it goes, sits in a cupboard somewhere?
True. Right? It has to be sustained kind of growth.
It has to be sustained before you can claim that, yeah, look, of course. You know, they're
well, and I think that that's also going to depend on, you know, how much the product, like, I think there's still limits on a lot of that stuff too, just like anything else. You know, you're not going to do BGAs and stuff like that. So as packages continue to shrink in that case, you know, you're still going to need to, you're still going to need some kind of breakout in order to use those boards and or use those printers. So
yeah, and the other thing is everyone is going to ultimately go to an FR4 anyway, unless you're happy with your one-off little prototype. Even if you're going to do like a run of 10, you're probably not going to use this. You're going to send them away for a proper board, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's because you got more time, right? Typically, you'd have more time. It's not like, oh, I've got to produce 10 in a day right now.
Oh,
you know, it's
right. Yeah, I think, you know, this is still squarely...
The market for that is so limited. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on this. I don't, but... Just from all my experience, it just shows that it's so niche that it's almost not worth, you know, hyping up in any way. It's like, okay, so you can print a board. And you know, okay, I can go etch my own board too. I can go make a board in an hour if I want.
Right. Well, and it'll
be double sided, and it won't have plated through holes, but it'll have proper drilled holes. It'll be on proper FR4. I can make the damn thing in an hour.
Sounds like we need to have like a board off.
Face off. A board off. Right. An etch off. Etch off.
An etch off. Add on, right? Or print on.
Right. Yeah.
No, I think, I think totally. And I think if we have those guys on, we should definitely talk to them about that. Because I think there's other.
My way of doing it isn't as sexy and it's messier. But the fact that it's been done for like 50 years and it works, like. You know, I mean, that's how all hobbyists used to make their boards.
Yeah, right? but also, I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, an easier tool flow. I think in all of this stuff, it becomes a tool flow thing as well. And so that's another one that I would point to is that, so another one that I liked and actually that I had a link on the subreddit about as well, and I've talked about in the past, is the... Carbide 3D, who, again, they were there last year, but basically kind of closer to shipping. And no, they are shipping now, and then they have, you know, some new features and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, and so there's a link in the, for what do they call it? I can't even think of it now. The Nomad 883. So Dangerous Prototypes posted this earlier this week. But basically, it's just like another milling platform. But like honestly, in all this stuff, what it comes down to between Volterra, Cartesian, everybody else who's doing that, the printing stuff, and then Carbide and like other mill, basically all of these things, I think what it comes down to is software tool flows, right? Because even if you're if you're etching with the acid... You still need to make sure your tool flows are good and your printing is good and stuff like that.
It's messy and fussy and, you know, I'd love to be able to print a button for it to come out.
Right. And it's worth, like, even like a high-end LPKF, right? If the tool flow is, you know, if that is dominating your time, it's still not worth it, right? There's still a balance point where it's like, well, hire a tech or, you know, send it out for one day service kind of thing. So all of these things have these balance points. I think what's getting better though is that software, like the Nomad. I know the guy that did the software for that mesh cam, and from a milling perspective too, it's getting better. You know, it's like so from a lot of these things, I think it's just that more software is better, and that's good. That's really good. I mean, like, because I'm sick of messing with it, you know? And even like, so another thing I saw there was, there was three different picking places I saw, I think.
Right.
And so
I have one. I've got a pick and place kit.
That's right. That's right. I saw your video.
And about, I'm also getting a CNC kit as well.
Oh really? Which CNC kit?
For the life of me, I cannot remember. I'm trying to find it now.
what's the name of your pick and place? So you have the, it's the light placer, is that right?
The light placer, yes.
Light placer, yes, yeah.
The light placer.
I don't remember if they were there. I saw DIY PNP was there, and then Firepick Delta was there as well. Firepick Delta, yeah. And the Delta robots, I'm kind of over. Just in terms of they're kind of fussy, it seems like. But
really?
The DIY PNP, the software was actually really nice for that. And it was, you know, it was a bigger build platform as well. That's another problem with the Deltas is that they're, you know, like all of these things, like you look at them, you walk up to them and they're doing placements and the placements and they, you know, you ask, oh, well, how tight of a tolerance can you do? And they say, oh, well, you know, 603, oh, we're trying 0402. A lot of them said that kind of thing because 0402 is kind of the balance point. But even still, you walk up and like all of them have cut tape taped to the platform.
Taped to the baseboard. That's what my ones. Yeah, it does not have feeders. You know? And that's the kicker. You know?
Right. So I mean, I was at another event. I was at another event for Seed Studio because Seed Studio is opening a facility in the States in Oakland. So I went to an event for them and they actually brought a TM245.
Yes. Is that the one with the new vision? They've just released one with vision.
That is the one
with,
yeah, exactly. That's the
one.
I'm not sure if that one specifically, so I don't know the different models and stuff like that, but basically, that one does have some kind of feeder. It's like a, you know, a re-spooled component kind of thing, you know, like a, like a digi-reel kind of how they do that, or like, you know, basically rewinding them around a tinier reel, and then they have advancement and stuff like that. But
hold the press. My CNC, my milling machine I'm getting is the Inventables X-Carve.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that new platform. That's right. That was just released a little while ago.
Yes. They're taking pre-orders. They're shipping pre-orders. I think they're currently and I've got a pre-order.
Cool.
In for one of those. I didn't order it. They offered me one and
that's
said,
cool.
Which one do you want? Like, I could have got, like, the real big one, like the 1 meter by 1 meter or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, that's just stupid. I can't even fit that on the bench. Like, why? Just way too big.
Yeah, and all this stuff, I mean, like, that one is kind of, they call that 2.5D for that one. And that one has, I forget what the software is called for that, but they have a new browser-based software for making that. I think it's that one. So they have X-Carve, which is like an extensible platform, I believe. And then they also have their Carvey, which is like a more, that's the enclosed platform.
That's a commercial one, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that commercial software? Yeah. And they can give you a cheap license or cheapish.
Yeah, something
like
that.
Yeah.
Honestly, in all this stuff, it's going to come down to what are you using it for, it seems like. So
of course. Yep.
If you're going to be using it for milling, you know, largish boards, you might be okay for that kind of stuff. I think the Inventables stuff, they don't seem quite as rigid. Honestly, what it comes down for CNC is this rigidity and then flatness of your bed. It'll be interesting to see your perspective on that. But yeah, for all this stuff, they're all so that's the thing, like, you know, like walking around Maker Faire was like, oh, look, 3D gantry. You know, they had a 3D gantry of, like, they had a plasma cutter there. Like, I mean, like, they had the huge laser cutters. They had huge CNC, or sorry, huge 3D printers, you know, like, all of these things. And basically, they're all running this, like, it's all the same. That's what's crazy about it.
Right.
And that's good. I think it, you know, it definitely is opening up a lot of new avenues for stuff like that.
There are, like, some tools that are just getting better and better, right? Like the pick-and-place machines are getting better and better, but you really need to spend X amount. You know, you're not going to get one for $300, right? That's like never going to happen.
Right.
Ever. Like, there are some levels of things that are never going to happen unless you spend, like, never going to be really practical unless you spend a lot of money
right.
on them, like a decent amount of money on them. So
Yeah, right.
It's regardless of how much the technology improves, I suspect.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you're paying for higher precision. You're paying for that kind of stuff. But I think that those lower cost entry points, I don't know if I've said on the show before, but I always talk about with like instruments, like you should start at the lower level, because if you start with like a Haas VF2, you know, like you're going to, yeah. like, it's like, oh, well, I can't get mil resolution on, you know, this.
Well, see, that's the thing. Is it worth it? Like, is it worth you spending your money on like one of these 3D, circuit board printer machines, for example, and then print out, well, you know, dicky little single-sided boards, or you just spend your money getting real boards made, real professional boards made, you know?
I don't know.
It's how much learning do you get out of, like, you know, making your own boards? That's the thing why I don't etch my own boards anymore, right? Is because it's just it's pointless.
Right. Well, you've already gotten the learning out of it.
Well, there never has been any learning out of it, right? It's like building a kit, right? You don't learn anything. You learn how to solder, okay? You learn how to, you know, wire up a few things, but that's it, right?
Yeah, troubleshooting though too, right? I mean, if it doesn't work,
right? That's where you learn. You don't learn electronics by making your own boards. Like, it, you know, it is a nothing skill. Like, you're not going to go into the industry, oh, I can make my own boards.
Oh.
You know, like, everyone's going to go, well, so what? Like, you know?
Eh, maybe. I don't know, Dave.
It shows enthusiasm, but it's not a realistic, you know, industry skill.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Whereas designing and laying out proper boards that can be manufactured for production, that is a real skill.
That, I agree with that as well.
That is a valuable skill.
I do teach that, so.
Yep.
So, I don't know where the balance point is. I think that if people have a disposable income, though, you know, there's nothing.
Oh,
I think what ends up happening there is that people that buy some of the lower cost platforms end up contributing to them, and that is a skill in itself as well, because then you end up, you know, working on the software flow, getting deep into the, you know, how the steppers are working and stuff like that.
But how many people do it? Come on, you're talking 0.1% of people who buy these things actually contribute.
That's true. Yes, yes.
It's incredibly small. Yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
Right. So Maker Faire was all right.
It was, yes, noticeably absent. The Learn to Solder booth was no longer.
Who ran that? Was that an Element 14?
No, this year was Google. It was Google this year. But in the past years,
Google had a Learn to Solder?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the, you know, how much money they pay, but in the past years, it has been Radio Shack, which is obviously no longer allowed to monetarily contribute because they have no money.
No money news.
Yes.
Recent news. They have no money to pay makers.
Yes.
Who they bought, I presume they sent them stock and they went bankrupt. And well, yeah, oops.
Right. And the thing about that article is not actually that they're not getting paid. That's not too surprising about bankruptcy. It's that the big boys got paid first. You know, that's
they did. Yeah. Let's go through a list of who was owed money. Seed Studio were owed $800,000. Maker Media, i.e. Make Magazine, they were owed $106,000. Who's Magic? With a Y. In brackets, Arduino. I've never heard of them.
I think that might be the former name of the Arduino SRL in Italy.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think it might have been.
And then Parallax, Velamen, Little Bits, and Apple were owed a buttload of money first. Guess who got paid first?
The guy with the lawyers.
No.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Apple and Maker Media got basically paid the big money first. Because, as you said, they've got lawyers. And, The small players, they don't have lawyers.
Look at that.
So they go,
reality yeah. smacking people in the face. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Lawyers are still a thing. Yeah. Of course, that's conjecture on our parts, like most of this show. But
But that's a buttload of money. Seed Studio, for example, $800,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
significant.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they didn't get paid a red cent.
It's, like I said, Seed's moving to the States too, so it'll be interesting seeing. You know, they've obviously been growing for a long time.
Then they'll get lawyers as soon as they move to the States.
Yeah, lawyers. Right. Welcome. Here's your appointed lawyer.
Lawyer, yeah. As soon as you come into the country, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Sad but true.
And your cholesterol test.
Right. And here's a gun. Yeah.
Right, of course, of course. Oh, man.
Going to Texas?
Not even Texas, man.
No, I know. Anyway.
I was going to post a picture of it, but, you know, it's a holiday. It was just a holiday weekend here, and, like, I got a gun ad in the mail, and I was just like, Dave would lose his shit over this. Like,
Jesus.
It was, yeah. I mean, I live in, you know, somewhat, I live close to rural Ohio. It's not that surprising, but.
Right.
cultural differences.
You have to go hunting those deer, you know?
Yes. Yep. Or something.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, oops. They didn't get paid. But yeah. Apple got paid their $3.3 million. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Don't want to piss off Apple.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. Make your movement. Obviously, people that are doing stuff like that are, you know, maybe still struggling with the business aspects, but, you know, things are changing, right? Maker movement mm-hmm. side of things. There was actually a talk, last thing from Maker Faire, Chris Anderson did a talk. I actually get to see Chris and talk to him for a little bit as well. But he gave a talk about kind of the next step. And you said you watched this as well, right?
Oh, well, I watched a couple of minutes here and there. I sort of skipped through it just before the show. And he reckons that Maker Movement is dead. Welcome Maker Movement 2.0.
Long live the Maker Movement, yeah.
Yeah. And if my takeaway is correct, because I haven't watched it all, I think you're in agreement here, that his takeaway is that the reason the Maker Movement is dead, the do-it-yourself Maker Movement is sort of dead because to be successful, you have to be professional now. And he shows a graph curve of where basically it tails off after the Pebble. So Pebble is the first, he touts as the first example of a professional maker movement product that's, you know, that's competing with Apple and, you know, it's really polished and professional. And he said, right. Yeah, that's the future. You have to be like that. And I think in certain circumstances he's right. In others, no. You can be a massive success and do something that still has wires hanging out of it, right?
Maybe. I mean, I think that eventually over time things are going to move towards that polished model. For again, if you're going like, you know, like we talked about at the top of the show, like the broad mass market type stuff, right? People
if you want a $5 million Kickstarter, you've got to have a polished looking product.
Right. Or at least a polished looking render.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's just reality these days. I think, you know, Chris was spot on with a lot of that stuff. And he was talking about a lot of that software stuff as well, like, you know, tool flows and stuff like that. But I think for this stuff, yeah, he's right. I mean, like, there's obviously a ton of people that are going to Shenzhen to get their stuff made. You know, there's bigger volumes and it's just the growing up part of the maker movement. Like, you know, we've seen companies that have been doing this already. Chris's company included 3D Robotics. You know, it's just as you get bigger, you know, there's bigger demands on it and more people are going to be asking for that polish. And there's more room in the software realm. So
yeah, totally. But that shouldn't put people off. I mean, I don't want this talk to put people off from doing their Kickstarter or whatever. You know, because you can, you know, you don't have to be that polished. Okay,
no,
sure.
Don't.
If you want to become a Pebble and, you know, get massive venture capital funding, right? You know, you probably can't dick around with, you know, a couple of, you know, homemade boards, right?
Right. Well,
it doesn't mean you can't get hundreds of thousands of dollars and start a successful business.
True. But the honestly, my takeaway from it, like we talked about this about 3-4 years ago now, right? As hardware started to pick up, we're like, oh, well, this is going to be a cycle. And this is just, you know, Chris is pointing it out. And I think that it's, you know, it's easy for other people to see too. It's just the cycle is kind of moving past where people are still going to be interested in hardware, but it's not going to be interested in hardware as much from a business perspective and millions kind of perspective. It's just that, you know, now it's back to people that were always interested in electronics. You know, like they've been here the whole time. They're our listeners. There's, you know, like your viewers.
The return of the real electronics hobbyist.
It's a bigger crowd now, though. Like, but I think it's just right. There will be less focus on it because there will be more money to be made other places, you know. And I think that that's not a bad thing at all, right? I mean, like there's tons of things that still... we still benefit from it, right? I mean, we still have more platforms that are disposable to work on, but it's just, yeah, there's less of a chance that you're going to break out and make, you know, $1 million and, you know, or raise $1 million, right? Not make $1 million. Yep. You can make $1 million. The jump to conclusions, Matt.
$1 million doesn't go far.
I know it doesn't. Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah. But
if you start hiring people and, you know, right, doing exactly, everything else, exactly. And, you know,
I mean, like, look
it
at
just
that,
gets pissed away.
The chip, that thing that just came out. I mean, like.
Oh, that $9. Is that $9 ARM board?
Yep.
Right.
I don't know if. Is it ARM? I think it's ARM.
Yeah, yeah. It's one.
It's
some variant of ARM.
It's Linux based. Yeah. I mean, like, it's Linux. Yeah. It's Debian on board and it's got hardware peripherals and all these wireless.
How much is that getting? These days.
Yeah, it's definitely still active, but I know it's $9 for the board. It's $24 if you actually want to have like a video output.
If you want to actually have something usable, yeah. They're up to 1.75 million of a 50 grand goal.
Wow, yeah. So yeah, I mean, you can do that kind of stuff, but, you know, and there's been other ones recently that we didn't even talk about, like the Onion Pie just came out, and like what one hits on and another one does, like, you know, like I don't know why one's... No, not Onion Pie. It was, what was it? It was something Onion. Onion.
How are they making money on this? $9. I mean, like, as if you think you can make a business out of that.
You make money on the...
on the accessories and plug-in
boards.
You make
it up on the accessories,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. People also say that the shipping as well. And it was the Onion Omega.
Oh, right.
That's the one that I was thinking of. So okay. The Onion Omega another... Jeez, right. 4,500 people backing it and stuff like that. So,
and that was part of Chris's talk as well. He was saying, just assume that hardware is free because you can buy this $9 super powerful Arduino Linux computer, right? Yeah. Assume that a Linux computer is free. Assume that Wi-Fi is free. Assume that Bluetooth is free. You can buy a $3 Wi-Fi adapter.
Yes.
You know, and
I just did.
You know, you just did, and you're using it.
Yeah. Sort of.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
I posted the ESP8266. That's everywhere now. I finally got a couple, and I posted a picture.
Yeah,
of my,
I think
my
I need
Bodgy
to buy a
thing.
Couple just to have in the junk bin here.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the idea. And but yeah, I mean, all of these things, you know, like you know, we've been bashing the term Internet of Things for a long time, but when Internet's free and when Wi-Fi is free, like all those things Chris was saying, you know. Yeah. That's when it really happens. It's when you stop thinking about it and stop talking about it. It's just everything's connected because it's easy. You know, that's
right.
That's when things actually change. And then when that starts taking off and everything has internet and everything's pushing packets on the internet and broadcasting, then there's a software layer on top of that. And then eventually all these things ad hoc kind of start talking to one another. And then it's like, oh, well, crap, we have a networked home. We didn't even think about it. I just bought some, you know, network curtains and I just... You know, it was because I didn't have a choice. You know, it's like almost like that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
I was actually looking at my, I think it was because I was playing with this thing today and I was chuckling to myself about all of the stupid things that like you could do a dumb Kickstarter video for, like, hey,
right,
Kickstarter,
yeah, yeah.
You know, the janky guitar in the background. Ding, 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 ding. Hey, Kickstarter, we're here today to bring you the newest internet connected technology. The Internet of Hammer. Every time you strike a nail, it'll tweet, bang, bang, bang. And then I was like, internet of toilet paper. Your toilet paper's out. If you didn't realize this already, the rest of the world already does.
It's so sad.
Yeah. No, it's so sad. That's the thing. Like, it's just all of these things, you know, like you stop noticing it. That's when it becomes a thing. Mm. When it's
right.
When it's easy and it's, you know, like even the tool stuff, right? It's, you know, CNC stuff becomes easy when the software makes it not hard, you know, huge deal to switch between one or another. You know, like 3D printing used to be really hard too, and now it's like I learned it in 3 hours, you know, like how to slice something up and print something.
Right.
That's not a thing anymore. You know?
Ultimately, for most things these days, I'm going to say that
prognostication
it's the software,
coming, folks.
The software that makes things easy these days.
It's always been that right? day. I mean, like, the hardware makes it accessible, but yeah, the software makes it easy.
It's, yeah. Like a 3D printer is freaking useless without software that just makes it work that.
Right? Can you imagine, like, it's like, folks, it still runs on G-code. Like, have you ever seen G-code? Like, it is terrible.
You can hand program your own G-code.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You
know, like, God, it's terrible.
Like doing websites used to be hard, for example, until when you hand coded in HTML.
Right. And now it's you download WordPress, install
you
it easily in
WordPress,
one click.
And boom.
Buy a theme or download a theme, and you're like, and you have a website. That's not an issue anymore.
Website, yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's still professionals that are making it, right? I mean, there's still people that are doing cutting edge websites and doing interesting things there.
Yeah,
but it's not the edge anymore. You know, like the edge is now, hell if I know, like design, right? You know, like there's other stuff now that like people care about. And, you know, electronic, like analog electronics, hey, that was left in the dust 40 years ago, you know, like it's just not a thing anymore. I mean, there's still pockets of interesting things and there's still experts around it, right? And I used to work with a bunch but like there's not every leading edge person in the industry is doing that now, you know, that's just, there's no need, there's no money in it. And so they can't support itself. Same thing with websites. There's not people like hand coding HTML. You're not going to be making, you know, the money you require to live in the Bay Area.
Exactly.
So yeah,
and things like Chris Anderson's drones, for example, they're nothing without software. Right?
Yeah. Right.
I've backed this new throw and go.
Oh, you did?
Throw and track drone.
Oh,
yes,
yeah?
I did. Yeah, I
what was that called?
In.
It
yeah.
was a. It was named after a lady.
Lily.
That's right.
Lily.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
I backed it and
beautifully
I've got to wait
done video at least.
Yes. I've got to wait forever for it to be delivered, like next year or something, and if they even deliver, you know.
Yeah.
But
right.
it's the promise of it just working.
Yep.
You know,
Yeah, and you said that before about like that's why you use Windows, right? And
right, yes, it just works. I don't want to have to dick it. That's why I've been using Windows since 1990 or whatever, you know, it is. You know,
I'm guessing through that 25-year span, Dave, it hasn't just worked.
But it's
just worked,
you know,
more than Unix and then Linux.
Well,
I enjoy it a lot
more now because it works a lot better. I plug something in and it just works,
pretty much.
And
that's what a lot of people say about Macs as well, right? I mean, like that's
right.
For a lot of things,
of
it's just
I can understand
nice design and just, you know, a lot of integrated environment stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, I've been dealing with this I've been deciding on, obviously I've talked about it in the show before, but you know, deciding on a platform, like a micro platform, and I want to build my own board. And you know, again, just for the learning for contextual electronics, just for the learning of, you know, going through board design, speccing out a chip, reading the actual data sheets and making sure that everything's right. Like there are skills in there that are very necessary, but not a lot of people are going to need them these days, but you know, some people are. But, you know, like, I'm just at the software piece right now and, you know, trying all these dev boards and, man, it's still not there. You know, like, like Arduino is, right? I mean, that's what's jarring.
Arduino's, that's what made it so successful is that it kind of sort of just worked, You know, it's the Arduino is no different to the same exact same development board from 20 years ago. Exactly the same.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The thing that made a difference is 8-bit AVR. You know, it's like
yeah. But yeah,
30
who cares?
Years ago, it's exactly the same, right? Yes, it's the ecosystem around it and the ease of use.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, and I'm sure that we've you know we've changed our tune around here, but like you know like we've seen enough of it that like come on like it's so easy these I was playing with this ESP, but I've actually been interfacing. I don't have a serial mm-hmm. programmer in my house, so I was like, oh, I'll just use a Teensy, right? So I've been using a Teensy from PJRC.com, and you know, because you know, again, it was just easy, and then all the Arduino stuff just worked. It was, I mean, it's just like, it's nuts. It's just nuts. Mm. And libraries everywhere. And so I think the interesting thing going forwards actually will be the people that dive down further, right? Those are the people, they'll be very niche, like you say, but they'll be extremely sought after, right? You'll have, you know, the Paul Stoffergens of the world, that's the guy who does the Teensy, you know, like he's in the weeds doing, you know, translating mm-hmm. this Freescale data sheet and then writing the code of, you know, he's got a team as well, I think. But, you know, like, you know, there's that. And then they're the service providers for the everybody else making it easy, right? That there's a business opportunity in the making it easy. But, you know, most people won't dive into these smaller pigeonholes where, you know, it's just doing that one thing. Most people are going to do the broader stuff. And then some people will do, you know, the smaller, you know, very targeted things like, you know, developing a Teensy and stuff like that. So.
You want to know what I like?
What's that?
Is that regardless of all this newfangled ease of use stuff.
Uh-huh.
It is still, if you want a successful product, cannot get away from doing proper electronics. You have to customize your product. You can't go to the market, look, I've got this new $9 chipboard and I'm plugging all these shields or whatever they bloody call them on top of them, and here's my finished product, and I've just got some smart software to go with it. Mwah, fail.
Right?
You're not going to have a successful product doing that. A successful product has to go back to the bare metal and lay out the board for, you know, optimize your BOM, do everything else, design for manufacture, design for test, blah, 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 right?
Yep, yeah, definitely.
Electronics, it's not going away.
Right.
It's not going away.
Right, and it'll still be that, like I mentioned before with analog electronics, you know, like, there's still pockets of people that are doing that stuff, but it's not huge, but then those are the providers for other people, right? So, Yeah, so I mean... Don't despair. If people are listening and they're like, oh, what am I going to do? It's like, well, don't worry about it. You know?
No, somebody asked that. What is the point of learning basic electronics as a hobbyist?
That was a good
somebody
question,
somebody asked
I
this from Vikash?
Vikash, I think,
asked this?
Yeah.
He's genuinely confused. What is the point of learning basic electronics? There are already cheap modules. You know, he's talking about exactly this. That makes it super easy to do a variety of things. It's all plug and play. And, well, that's great. Yes, you can design your own farting gnome, right? Go ahead and do it. It's trivial, right? Yeah, you don't need to know electronics. It's plug and play. You plug them together. You write some simple code, and bingo, you've got a farting gnome that tweets every time every time it farts. Like, oh, great. Okay. You can, you know, you can make a robot super easy. And all, you know, everything else. Make a drone and everything else.
Yeah.
But if you want to actually make a real product, you have to know real electronics.
Yeah.
You have to be able to lay out boards. You have to be able to know bill of materials. You have to be able to read data sheets. You have to cost optimize. You have to be able to choose alternative parts. You have to do all the real stuff involved in real electronics.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think this is actually an even better time though, because it seems like one of the problems is that like you look on, you know, you go on Reddit, you go on Twitter, you go on, you know, Hackaday projects, anywhere like that, and you see all these people doing this amazing work, and you're like, well, everything's been done, you know, like that. I think that's what Vikash is talking about here. It's so it's very frustrating. And first off, I think that there's a huge benefit in doing it anyways, right? And just going and learning it, because you're going to get something out of it. You know, you're going to do what Dave talks about. And like when your project doesn't work, you're going to learn that troubleshooting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the big difference is, you know, I think about my experience. You know, I wasn't a hobbyist when I was younger. I, you know, started in school, and the way that universities do it, you know, they start bottom up. You know, they start, okay.
Oh, they start here.
Here is physics. Here is an
here's
electron.
Here's physics, I know. Yeah.
Here is a cow, you know, expanding milk in all directions, right? That is a terrible way to learn. I personally,
It is awful.
And now has never been easier to blink a light, be interested enough, get that endorphin hit, be interested enough in it, and then be like, well, I wonder what made that LED turn on. And then it's like, oh, it was code. And then what does this code do? Oh, well, there's assembler. And what does assembler do? That goes down to machine code. And then eventually a transistor turns on. What's a transistor made of? And like, it takes longer to get down from the top down, but I'll be damned if you don't keep more people interested along the way.
You know, absolutely. Like,
and that's the best part. Like, some people are, you're going to get people that stop at different levels, but when you go bottom up, like, look at the dropout rates in EE programs. You know, it's just nuts. It's like,
oh, is it? Is it really high? I haven't looked.
I mean, just general engineering, like, you know, so you go in engineering programs and they stick you in calculus, they stick you in physics. You get 50% fallout.
That's your first 2 years, folks.
Yeah, you get 50% fallout just from the math, you know? And like and you're missing people that could be really good electronics designers who would be willing, you know, like, you know, it's all about the promise of the future. Oh, well, in the future, you know, you work on this stuff. You know, screw that. Like, why not be interested in the electronics first? This is where the hobbyists benefit, because they understand, people that were hobbyists come in and say, okay, well, I'm still interested in the material. I'm willing to learn the math and struggle through it. Whereas other people say, well, I don't even know what's on the other side of this. This math sucks. I'm going to go do something better or easier. And that's a disservice, I think, to students in university settings. So, and I think the big change now as well is that, you know, over time we've seen, you know, like, you start looking at programs over time, university programs haven't changed in 50, you know, 100 years, whatever, you know, and the big difference is that you had ham radio people that were doing this stuff before they came to school, and then there was that big dearth of
not just ham radio stuff, thank you very much. You had electronics hobbyists like me.
Right, of course.
When I was a boy.
Right, but Dave, I mean, ham used to be really big. You know what I mean? Like, it was a huge thing.
So was electronics.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
hobby.
Okay.
So was solid state electronics hobbyists, and just, yeah.
Yeah, so
I mean,
all that stuff.
Even in Pissant Australia here, right? We had, like, I think 4 electronics magazines you could go buy on the newsstand at one point. Right? Yeah. For a tiny country like this, we had 4 local magazines.
That's true. Yeah.
Right? The hobby market was huge.
And then it went away. And then and you think about that ripple effect through time, right? I mean, like, all of those students who now come in, and, you know, especially when they're getting, you know, I think about when I went into school, you know, it was all around it was right after the crash of 2001, right? And so there's all these people that were interested in software and, you know, even hardware, just from the money aspect, and that's not right, you know, like, and there was that big gap in hobbyist stuff as well. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but it was just less prevalent than it was when Dave was growing up. And yeah, I mean, that affects a lot of things. So top down, you're gonna capture more people that way, I think, and that's really that's the best part about right now, I think. So top down for the win.
Absolutely. You'll get no argument from me. Yeah. So we hope we answered your question, Vikash.
There was actually really good conversation over on the subreddit too, so people should definitely, I'll link it in. Yeah. It's definitely
excellent. Good. I am very tempted right after this show. I think I might go and do an EEV blab answering his question.
Because well,
I
should. Think it's, that'd be good.
Yeah, relevant. Yeah, I think it's a really good question.
I think so too.
Why should
exactly.
I?
Because it's common, right? It's especially like there's so much stuff these days. Yep. It's like, I'll never, you know, it's like, how do you start eating an elephant? One bite at a time. I mean, that's what it is, right? And you just, it's just about keeping interested as you're doing it. You know, oh this ear is very textured, you know.
goodness.
Yeah, sorry. That was gross.
anyway, so that's, excellent question. Thank you very much.
Now, I think another thing that helps people stay interested is being inspired. And holy crap, did I get a dose of inspiration when I was out.
Oh, God, we don't need Chris getting another bloody dose of inspiration, folks.
This was amazing, though. So Alicia and Chris...
He's going to go form another company. He's going to change direction.
Well,
again,
maybe,
right?
Yeah. It reaffirmed my interest in robotics. So Alicia and Chris from Embedded, they invited me to go on a tour with the Tesla factory with them.
Oh, yes, right.
And
with
Sophie Kravis, who's from Hackaday as well, is who I work with. Yeah. And oh my God. it was... So... We went on this tour. You know, it's just it's a standard factory tour. Yeah. Yeah. And I should preempt this with I've never been to another auto factory, and it could be
which I was going to say it's going to be the same at another auto factory. So don't think
sure,
that Tesla's
though.
Some magical. Tesla's a bit. It's going to be a bit funkier, but basically,
I'm not sure in terms of automation. I think that there's a higher level of automation, but I could be wrong.
I'm sure it's higher, but not. Yeah, you know, I think if you went to the local Toyota plant, you'd be very impressed. I'm sure.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I think you're totally right about that. But I've just never been around this many robots before. And this is obviously, it was a huge plant. And, you know, just like driving through there, I turned to Alicia and I was like, this is like Jurassic Park for robots.
Right.
You know, we were driving
right.
around in a car.
Yeah. Right,
you know,
right.
Spared no expense. honestly, I don't know why they decided to do this, but like, you know, you have your standard like welding robots, and those were amazing.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
right.
they and we've showed yeah. the video. I'm pretty sure I had to sign an NDA, and I'm pretty sure that I'm allowed to talk about this because everything I'm talking about was in the video that we've shared in the past.
Then that's fine. Yep.
Yeah. The only thing I'm not sure about, they had these huge, huge robots at the end of the line that basically picked up the cars and then like carried them over to the next line. That's the crazy part that I don't understand. And maybe this is a standard thing at other automotive facilities and stuff like that. But that was so non-intuitive to me, you know,
right.
Why wouldn't you just like turn the whole thing? Why wouldn't you just have the car go on a curve and like turn around and go to the next line?
Yeah,
I'm sure it's because like so you could drive underneath it and stuff like that. But like just these robots were so big and beautiful and shiny and like, you know, like anytime you see this kind of precision, it's just, you know, there's just robots are frigging awesome. I guess I don't have too much to say other than that. I mean, like, the factory is very clean and, you know, very automated and stuff that.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan, though, and I think that the battery stuff is very interesting as well. Got to see
totally.
The guts of a couple
the
cars. So, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, Powerwall's coming out. So, you know, obviously, we're not very shy when we talk about Tesla around here. We're both very big fans of that, so.
Yeah. We're pretty big fanboys, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what comes next from them. You know, we didn't see any of the new stuff either. So that's, again, why I don't feel like there's any big problem with talking about it. So,
Right.
Yeah.
Then they aren't going to show a pleb like you all their crown jewels.
I wouldn't. It's not like I was there on like,
special secret.
Yeah, it wasn't like,
no,
Chris,
you were like
Chris, the guy, you know, who's got a podcast.
Right.
Ooh, no, this was like Chris, who has friends who have a Tesla, and they, you know, they do this for all the Tesla owners
because
you know,
if you're a Tesla owner, you're allowed to take a couple of people on a tour,
which is so nice of them. So, it was great. And if anyone gets the chance to go on any automotive tour, I was surprised. I guess I thought I knew what was in there. I expected, you know, a bunch of like, you know, sweaty people using screwdrivers and turning one screw. And
no.
That's now there's a robot to do that, and the robot doesn't sweat.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Speaking of robots.
What? No, I was just going to change tack completely and say go back to PCBs.
Okay.
I am looking at you. I downloaded the new Circuit Maker software out here.
Oh, yeah? That
Circuit
just came
Maker,
out, yep.
Yes. It's a beta. It's a beta release, but it's an open beta.
Yeah.
So anyone can go
or beta
get
if
it
you're, yeah,
and
yeah.
download.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Beta.
Yep. Anyways,
beta.
So what do you think?
Not beta. Beta. I haven't had a huge amount of time to use it yet, but the thing, I was actually wrong, because everyone told me that you couldn't, like, you couldn't make your projects private, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I actually went and tested this, and it's actually not true.
Huh, okay,
you can, yeah. See, the thing with Circuit Maker, when we talked about it before in the past, right, Altium, their original plan, when I spoke to them and got a special, I was the only one to ever get a, you know, a special pre-release look at what they were doing, their whole model was going to be, okay, it's going to be a basic free package, and then you buy all these add-ons,
right?
And,
yep.
You know, and you're like, it'll be like a shopping cart. If you need 8 layers for a month, you can go buy it. You know, you can pay like $50 and buy that capability. And I thought that was great, right? I thought that was a winning.
Yeah, I still agree, you know, with that. If you can make it work, totally.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was a winning strategy. You know, you have a little bit for free, you know, just like the Eagle kind of thing. And then you, if you want more, well, you know, Eagle's ridiculous because you've got to pay $1,000 if you want to do a, you know, a bigger board. But yeah, Altium, we're going to go, okay, you want to do a bigger board? $50. Thank you very much. Yeah, people will just hand over that like there's no tomorrow, you know. And anyway, they in the end, they decided, no, we're not going to go with that solution. Everything's going to be free. Here's the whole Circuit Maker program, no limits whatsoever.
Interesting.
So that's what they've gone with. Yeah, that's what they. So if you download this, there are no limits whatsoever. But the catch was, is that you had to make everything public.
Oh, right. Which is what they first talked about, right? Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. And I thought, failed.
Yeah,
you know, and they
missed it by that much.
Yeah. And they weren't going to have a private, like a paid private option.
Right? Like a GitHub or something, right?
Like you couldn't work on your files locally and keep them private. You know, and everyone just went up in arms about this and said, that's just stupid, right? So Altium said, oh, yeah, we'll think about making them private. But as it turns out, I actually went and tried it. I created a project, and the project becomes public, right? So everyone can see that I've started my new microsupply project, right?
Okay.
But they can't actually see the individual PCB and schematic files until I actually commit them. So you can make them private, right? So I can just work on my schematics and PCBs. I can generate the Gerbers. I can do everything else and just never release it. and bingo. So I've got this Circuit Maker package with no limitations for free that I can keep all my projects private. It's like what's the catch? It's the Holy Grail. And they went, well, we never really thought about that. and it's like, well, yeah.
Dave's also going to come back in about a month, be like, also, don't update from the beta 2. They've changed things.
Because they've changed it. Yeah. They've changed the strategy. Because they've basically, because they've given you everything, right? It's not... There are no limits to it, but the tool, I haven't used as much, but apparently the tool isn't as automated as what their proper Altium designer tool is, you know. So if you want real professional productivity, you've got to go for Altium designer.
Oh.
Yeah, right. Use something else, right? I'm impressed that they gave everything away, and I went and actually tried it, and I went, hey, I can keep everything private, so...
Yeah, you know, I got an invite.
You know, I think it's a win. So I actually think I'm going to do my new microsupply project in Circuit Maker as a test.
Oh, cool. That'll be good.
So, yeah.
And it may be public at some point. Maybe.
Make it public, yeah.
Yeah.
That was my fear. Like, the reason I wanted to test this is because my fear was if you had to make everything public, then because all the files are stored on the cloud and everything else, right? So... That's another thing I'll talk about in a second quickly. But I thought, like, every time you make an edit, it's going to be public. So I'd have all the public watching every edit I do. And then that's just stupid, right? So,
right. Well, especially because you'd get a lot of comments about it, right?
I would get a lot of comments, and people would go and use a circuit that doesn't work, and then they'd come back and, oh, your circuit doesn't work well because I haven't finished it, you dickhead. You know, like,
release numbers, folks, not commits.
Right.
Don't go by commits. Right. Go by release numbers.
and so yeah, as long as you don't commit the project, it stays private, and a local copy is actually stored on your hard drive.
See, but Dave,
so
that means you're not going to be
cloud-based.
You're not going to be using Git revision control then. That's not healthy. It's not healthy, Dave.
Bleh. Yeah, shut up. I've been doing it for 20 years since before you were a boy.
I know. No, seriously, yeah. I talked about that on Twitter the other day. It was like, I didn't realize how much I've probably been at risk before doing that. You could do it. I've done it. I did it for my whole career until like a couple years ago as well. And, yeah. But it's just, you know, I didn't realize, you know, now it's kind of just part of my workflow. So it's different.
I know. That's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, and we can have like two people work on the thing at the same time, and if you don't have the local copy on machine, it automatically pulls it from the cloud. If somebody else has edited it and your one's out of date, it'll tell you, do you wish to update to the other person's, and blah blah, you know. So considering that David too and me are going to be working on this thing, it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need that sort of capability. It seems to have that. So yeah, I'm actually rather excited about it again.
Wait, you're saying
cold on the whole idea?
You're
for
saying
a long time.
Working on it though, or just being able to sync it?
Co-working. You know, he'll work on something one day, and he'll not at the same time.
Not concurrent. Okay, right.
Not concurrently.
Because we've said
work
conclusively
on
that no
go.
One really needs to do that. Like you might need to split out pages and. But yeah, anything with a merge in a...
Yeah, Altium thought that was the future of design, where everyone would be working on a PCB layout at the same time. It was like, and they added capability to do that, and it sucked, and it didn't work. And,
I think Upverter allows you to do that kind of thing, but
because
it's web-based and you could see it. But again, it's like, unless you're, you know, because of the decision-making stuff, it's the syncing becomes the problem, I think, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But no, but we'll certainly go back and forth to each other, you know, like he'll work on it one day and then he's off, you know, and then I'll work on it for a day and, you know.
Boom. Right.
You know, and then it
I've always
across
been, a, I've been
machines.
An advocate of, you know, splitting out by pages. And if you're not going to, if you are going to have multiple people in design, you know, at least assign people, you know, make it hierarchical and assign people to pages, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, just so you don't.
Well, this project's not big enough to warrant that really, you know. It's
can
like,
you can do hierarchy on the, on, on Circuit Maker?
I don't know. Don't know yet. I won't speak on that.
Okay.
Yep. But anyway, yeah, so I think I'm going to give it a try. So I hope it doesn't come back to bite me. People can, if you can freely say I told you so in 6 months' time when Altium have changed direction again or they've abandoned it or whatever, you know. And yeah. Anyway.
That's a encouraging, you know, if anything, you know, they should be, if that is the case, that they should be, you know, praised for that. That's good.
But we'll finish up with this. A lot of people's fear, though, is that if Altium have no way to make money from Circuit Maker, what's to stop them just cancel? You know, what's to stop the board of directors just going, nah, let's just scrap this in, you know, a year's time, 2 years' time, so people get invested in it, and then all of a sudden, nah, we're just going to abandon this. And because it's a cloud-based kind of thing, you know, it's like, what the hell happens, right?
Right. So, I agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, people may be able to say, I told you so in a couple of years. But anyway, I'm quite excited by it because, like, I still like Altium. And it looks and works like Altium. It is different to Altium Designer, but it's, you know, it's similar enough for me to be totally familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm
sort of
happy in that aspect. So,
that's good. Yeah. I did get the email about it. I went to go install it, and then I saw it's Windows only. So I was...
Yep.
A little put off by that.
Yes, Windows only. Yeah, see, I'm not. It makes no difference.
Right.
To me.
Right, exactly. It's true. I mean, that's very common these days, even for a lot of these embedded tools I've been using. So.
Anyway, so we were going to do the new micro supply, which, yes, we are working on, by the way.
Oh, cool.
We were going to do it in Altium Designer, right? Because that's what we both use, right? But now, hey, we've got circuit makers available, so why not give it a burl?
I think even if you have a minion now, so even if you had to switch it over, you could pretty easily move it into another CAD package if you needed to. You know?
We could, but we'd both be starting from scratch. Whereas with Circuit Maker, where it's so
I mean it's moving it back into Designer. That's what I mean. Like you could do that pretty easily.
Well, at the moment there's no way to do it. I don't think.
No, that's what I'm saying, Dave. I'm saying that David could go and just click, click, click. Oh, look, page one is in the designer now. Like, I mean, like manually, like re-enter it into.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's what minions are for, Dave. Yeah. Come on.
Like. Because the project is so small. Yeah, just sit there for a day and you can recreate the thing. Yeah.
Which is usually the best way to do it anyways. I mean, like, so.
Importing stuff, you know, it's nasty, you know. Yeah. Just bite the bullet, sit there for a couple of days, and just redo it. You know,
I did find out that I didn't realize that KiCad can now pull in Eagle files natively because they switched over that XML thing. You don't even have to libraries. A lot of people are doing that now. So basically, Eagle files are now portable for a lot of these things. So
yes, because they're in open XML format.
Yeah. So that's good. I think that's something to be encouraged.
Circuit Maker can load Eagle files with no issue at all. Apparently, cool.
So I mean that we should be pushing other programs to be able to make these open formats as well. I think that that's great that CadSoft did that. So
totally.
Yeah, I saw a talk on Adam and Matthew from Wayne and Lane. So Adam's been on the show before, and they gave an update on KiCad at Maker Faire as well. So they're in feature freeze. Yes. So stable release will be here in July if people are interested. If not, if you're Circuit Maker folks, that's okay too.
Right.
Yep.
And it took them 15 years to do it.
Yeah. Right. 11, Dave. 11.
All right, 11. Sorry. Yeah.
last thing I want to bring up. So if people are still listening, I figure they're at least like the show a little bit, and maybe they like hearing me talk and want to work with me a little bit. I'm actually looking for people to help me with contextual electronics. Like I mentioned, I've been doing this embedded stuff. I'm interested in kind of getting someone with embedded background, kind of just for doing it the right way. So if there's people out there that are interested in joining in and helping out with contextual electronics, and you've got an embedded background, especially if you're doing like bare metal type stuff, shoot me an email, chris@theampower.com.
This is a paid gig?
Yeah, it wouldn't be like full-time paid kind of thing. It'd be like a revenue share kind of thing. So.
Oh, revenue share, right?
Right. Got which it. Would be, the other thing about that is if the program grows, then I am looking for eventual partners, that kind of thing. So I'm interested in talking to people about that, and might as well use my soapbox for it. So
why not?
Yeah.
The Amp Hour is our soapbox,
and nothing else.
Yeah, pretty much. awesome.
Anything else that we should mention? Nope. I don't think there's anything else.
We're over time.
Your project this week. Go watch Dave's video about his old Logic Analyzer project.
The old Logic Analyzer.
Yeah, that was fun to see that. So, and we've talked about that on the show before. So.
It was lengthy. It was like 50 minutes long. I was disappointed, Dave, how long it turned into.
People don't care.
No, right. Yeah. Okay. You didn't watch the whole thing, did you?
I'm kind of working through it, so.
Ah, right. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Did you see my video about or the post I did about the ways to stop the robot uprising? Check it out. I just sent you the link. It was a joke. The picture cracks me up every time. It's like I know it's really healthy.
It's designed. I'm going to looking at the photo. I assume it's designed as a medical teaching.
Yeah,
aid,
like for
how to
give prostate exams. Yeah, prostate exams, stuff like that. Your butt has a name, and his name is Patrick.
Patrick, yeah.
Definitely worth checking out.
that's great.